Okay, tonight we are going to do NTI Revelation chapter 20. And that is on page 486. This is something you must be willing to do. You must be willing to rest the thinking mind at every opportunity given you. Learn to recognize your opportunities to rest the thinking mind. And now here it gives some really interesting suggestions. I'll probably pause and talk about each one as I read. When you feel to go into prayer, rest and let a prayer rise from the heart. So what this is saying is, no longer decide for yourself what your prayer is going to be. You know, close your eyes and let a prayer rise up without any idea what you're going to say. And, you know, I, of course, have done, you know, hundreds of hours of audios where I started many of them for many years. I always started with a prayer. And that's exactly what I would do. I would close my eyes and I would have no idea what my prayer was going to be. And then I would just let the prayer rise and I'd pray this prayer. And then what amazed me every time is how in the teaching, whatever was in the prayer was also in the teaching, and I didn't plan either. I mean, it was always just absolutely amazing to me, and I became very, very convinced again of this intuition that is beyond the thinking mind. You know, I'm just saying the words as they're coming to me. Like, I have no goal. I'm not going anywhere in the prayer. Like, I have no purpose for the prayer. I just feel, and often what would happen is I would close my eyes, and the first thing that happened to me a lot, the first thing I would feel is gratitude. And so, you know, I would start with gratitude. In fact, let me just do it live now. Let me just say a prayer. All right, I feel gratitude, and this feels like to me just it's a gratitude joy, and I can't separate the two words. It's a deep, enduring gratitude joy, and it's a gratitude joy for life, for living, for ising, not for anything specific, not for, you know, certain things that happen during the day or certain things that I have or certain people in my life. There's a feeling that if the gratitude was there, then there'd be duality. There'd be the opposite. This joy is... this joy is like... it's like having gratitude for air. It's just gratitude for isness, gratitude for being without anything specific. And so what I want to say is thank you so much for life. Thank you so much for beingness. Thank you so much for awareness. And thank you so much for all of the guidance that has come, that is helping me to clear away those obstacles so that I am not aware of life, of being, of isness, of awareness. You know, when we're so focused on our problems and our worries and our concerns, life still is, but somehow we're not present with it. To be present just with being. Such a magnificent gift, because being is such a magnificent gift. So thank you both for the life that I am and for the guidance that is bringing me to this point of being aware and being grateful for that simple, miraculous isness that is. Amen. And that's how prayer happens. You know, so you go into it with no intention, and then something beautiful happens. Right? I mean, I don't know if it felt beautiful to you, but it felt beautiful to me. Something beautiful happens. And so that's what this is saying. It's saying one of your opportunities to rest the thinking mind is just to let a prayer rise from the heart. You're not the one praying. You're almost receiving the prayer and then repeating, you know, what comes.
That's happened to me quite a bit since MPP, you know, where you part of the home or, you know, you just go within and the prayer would come. That
yeah.
happened to me quite a bit. And so I never thought I would get to that, but
yeah.
it is. It's beautiful.
Yeah. All right, so starting with sentence 5. When you feel to answer a question in the mind, rest and let the answer find its way into your awareness. So a question might rise up like, you know, let's say something happens in front of you that you really, like your ego, you really think that that is completely unacceptable. I know, this is your reaction. That is completely unacceptable, and you are so upset. You're so upset. But what this is saying is to ask within yourself, you know, maybe how can I see this differently? How can I come to accept this? How, you know, what in me needs to be let go? Ask the question and then leave it. Don't try and figure out the answer. Ask the question and leave it and let the answer find you. And, you know, maybe it will come immediately. Maybe it won't. Maybe it will come later in the day or tomorrow or the next day. But ask the question and then drop it. You know, stay open for the answer, obviously, but don't go into trying to figure it out by yourself, because then you're still using the thinking mind. Trust that the answer will come in a way that you can see it, recognize it, understand. It could come in a song. You know, it could come in, you know, the next time you open NTI, there it is. You know, it could come in so many ways. You know, you could be in the shower and boom, it just hits you like a ton of bricks. You know, it could come in so many ways, but not through thinking is the point. Don't try and figure it out with your thinking. So when you feel to answer a question in the mind, rest and let the answer find its way into your awareness. When you feel tired and unsure as to what to do, rest and let a feeling of what to do enter you. To me, what this is talking about when you feel tired, this kind of means out of the flow. Because if you're in the flow, there's this natural, you do one thing and then you kind of know what to do next and you kind of know what to do next. But there are times when you're not in the flow. And, you know, maybe you are feeling frustration, or maybe you're feeling boredom, or maybe you're feeling something else, but it's calling all of that tired. And it was just a bit of a struggle going on. And it's saying, when there's a struggle, when you feel tired, don't retreat to your thinking mind and start ordering your day, thinking about pros and cons and deciding. Go ahead, even then, rest and let a feeling of what to do come. And if you're really having I'll call it a bad day, you know, what to come could be, don't do any of this. Go take a walk, right? It could be, you know, something completely different because you need to be removed from it maybe. So you also have to be willing to release your limits about what's supposed to come. You know, it should be telling me how to solve this problem. Well, maybe it's not going to tell you how to solve the problem. Maybe it's going to tell you to go do something else until you're in a different frame of mind, right? So, but the point is, don't go into the thinking. Let what you are to do come. When you feel inclined to speak and don't know what to say, rest and let what to say be given. So the same kind of thing, you know, just don't be thinking. Like, let's say somebody says, you know, oh, my daughter, she's dating this biker guy, and, you know, he's got tattoos all over him and earrings, and I just can't stand it, you know, and you're sitting here listening to this, right? And you're, you know, and there's just so much judgment coming from this person, and this is a social situation, and you know, like there's this pressure, like, oh, I'm supposed to say something back to this. You know, what do I say back to this? Don't think about what to say back to this, right? Don't struggle in the mind. You guys know the situation, right? I'm sure you've done it where you're trying to struggle in the mind and figure out what's the right-minded thing to say or whatever. Don't do that. Be willing to say nothing until something arises in you to say, right? And that's what this says. Don't do the thinking to try and figure out the right-minded thing to say. And, you know, we do a lot of this thinking. You know, like I remember one of the questions people used to always ask, and maybe some do, what would love do? I sat in a room full of people once, course students, arguing about what love would do in a particular situation. If they're arguing about what love would do, that means they're in the thinking mind, right? So we go into the thinking mind trying to think what love would do, think what the right-minded thing is. This is saying don't think. Don't think. And when you feel upset or saddened or afraid, rest and let illusions fade. Of course, that's talking about rest, accept, and trust, right? So I'm just going to read all of that now without pausing to speak, just so we can hear it all, starting at the beginning. This is something you must be willing to do. You must be willing to rest the thinking mind at every opportunity given you. Learn to recognize your opportunities to rest the thinking mind. When you feel to go into prayer, rest and let a prayer rise from the heart. When you feel to answer a question in the mind, rest and let the answer find its way into your awareness. When you feel tired and unsure as to what to do, rest and let a feeling of what to do enter you. When you feel inclined to speak and don't know what to say, rest and let what to say be given. And when you feel upset or saddened or afraid, rest and let illusions fade. When the thinking mind is rested, the vision of spirit is given. This vision may guide you in all you think or do or say, because this vision is your vision based on the realization of true perception. This vision knows the false as false and the true as true, so this vision knows that which it sees. Knowing what it sees, it knows how to interact with it. And the purpose of each interaction is the purpose of awakening the one from the dream. So as I was reading this paragraph, the memory that was coming to me was, you know, once upon a time, Jasmine used to really frustrate me, really make me angry. And that, of course, is one of the first things that I worked on. And eventually what happened was all of the ideas in my mind that needed to be let go were let go. And then Jasmine was fine. But what was interesting was that I let go of all of this stuff when she was younger. So by the time she reached the rebellious years of 13 and 14 and 15, I had already let go of everything. So what happened for me when Jasmine started becoming rebellious was, instead of, like you told us, saying, she's disrespecting me, she's not listening to me, she's not obeying me, that's how the old me would have seen. But the way the new me saw was, ah, she's 13. Ah, she's 14. You know, and I mean, this is the way 13-year-olds work. You know, this is the way 13-year-old girls act. I mean, that's just like, this is the way a 3-year-old acts. You know, all 3-year-olds have similar patterns that they're learning. All 2-year-olds, right? So what this is saying is the vision, this vision is able to look at even the world in a practical, non-prejudiced way. Usually you're prejudiced by your ego ideas, your ego thoughts. Like, she doesn't respect me isn't prejudice. Right? It's coming from something else. It's not coming from what's actually happening. And when you remove all of those prejudices, let go of all of those false ideas, you're able just to look at the situation as it is. And sure, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe she's being acting from 13-year-old ego thoughts right now, but you know what? That's what 13-year-olds do. And not only that, there's this realization that the one who wrote the script of the world is I, but that I is us, you know, it's not Regina. But, you know, and this is what we wrote. We wrote for 13-year-olds to act this way. And you just don't find anything in it to judge anymore. But yet you're able to deal with it in whatever way you need to deal with it. And the funny thing is, usually the way I was guided to deal with Jasmine's rebelliousness when it arose was to do nothing. Just to let her be rebellious and just not to get involved. You know, not to... And it usually started disappearing pretty quickly. And in fact, I think she may have been one of the least rebellious teen girls ever to live. And I think it's because I had spirit guiding me not to get involved. Because if I was to get involved, then you got a game. you know, and then you're both, you get two players and you got a game, and you can bat that ball back and forth. But again, the point is, not only will you know what everything is, you'll know that everything's God, you also see the story more clearly, right? And you know how to be in the story and how to interact in the story. You're not confused and cluttered with all of these false ideas anymore. Verses 7 to 10. Peaceful dreams end in peace. For one who has seen the peaceful purpose of awakening cannot see fear in dreams. The purpose is the same and has not changed, but this one can see it now. This one can see it now because this one has learned to remember who he always is. So, for example, you know, once upon a time, all kinds of things upset me in a day. In a day. You know, I can't even remember now, but just in a day, all kinds of things upset me. I'm still awakening. That's how I perceive myself, still as awakening. So everything that happens still has that purpose. But it's easier. Like before we turn on the recording, you talked about an experience of noticing that it was easier. You noticed the I am bad thought come up. And used to, you said you'd have to sit with that and feel that for a really long time. And now you just saw that thought and you were able to let it go, and instantly there was joy. Well, that's what happens, is everything still has the same purpose, but it's easy, it's fast. You look at it, you let it go, you look at it, you let it go. You see that reaction, you notice the reaction, and it's gone. And it's just... So you're still doing the same thing, but there's no more struggle. Like the way I described it recently in Ireland was, you can become a master of forgiveness. Even before you're an awakened master, you can be a master of forgiveness. You get good at it, and it gets easy, and it's not hard. And so that's what this is talking about. Peaceful dreams end in peace. Because now you're very clear at what you're doing. You're letting go, letting go, letting go, and you're doing it quickly and easily. Everything that gives you an opportunity to let go, you're embracing that and letting go again. Verses 11 to 15. Death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And that's actually a quote from Revelation. Revelation says, death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death. Now, this is the Holy Spirit's interpretation of those two lines from Revelation. When one chooses to let go of dreams, one chooses to let go of the ideas of dreams forever. The ideas of dreams are never real, but they are experienced as real as long as they are desired. When they are no longer desired, they cannot be experienced. They cease to be no longer an idea in the mind forever. So this says death and Hades, of course, which means hell, death and hell are thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death. Now, I don't know what you guys know about the Bible, that in the book of Revelation, there's a first death and a second death. The first death would occur like if we were in a car wreck tonight and we all died. Right? That's the first death. The second death occurs, according to Revelation, after you are resurrected and judged. So according to Revelation, if you read it very carefully, there isn't. It's not like you die tonight in a car wreck and get judged. Actually, everybody dies. And then there's a resurrection. And then in the resurrection, everybody is judged. Some people get to live forever, eternal life. And some people die the second death. And if you die the second death, there's no more chances. You're dead forever. In fact, Revelation doesn't actually teach a fiery hell that most Christians believe in. Revelation teaches a second death, where you're just dead. That's what it teaches. And Hades is actually a word that comes from the Old Testament. Most people think it means hell, but what it really translates to is the grave. So this is saying death and the grave were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death. What this means is death dies, the grave dies, and then a lot of people are going to think this means hell. We could say hell dies, and they are never resurrected again. So imagine the idea of death dying to you, and the idea cannot be reborn again. Imagine that. That's what this is talking about. Imagine all ideas that create, I'll go ahead and say hell. You know, any idea at all that could create hell for you dies, and it cannot be reborn again. If death died for you, and all ideas that create suffering died for you, and it was impossible for them to ever come back, how would you probably feel?
Joyful.
Yeah. So that's what this is saying. This is saying that when you choose to let go of dreams, when you're really ready to let go, all of these ideas that come from dreams are going to cease to be too. They're going to die the second death. They will never be resurrected again. So it's a very, very joyous paragraph. And that's the end of Revelation 20. And I'm going to go right on, I think, to Revelation 21, if you guys are okay for that, because it kind of continues what happens after the second death, right? So here's what happens after the second death of these false ideas. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the old heaven and the old earth had passed away, and there was no longer any division. And I saw the holy city of Jerusalem within my mind. Through this knowledge and this seeing, I saw all that I could not see before. So his entire perception, the one speaking, or our entire perception after the second death of false ideas, is completely changed. And this is what is being seen now. I saw that I am in God, and God is in me, and separation of the two is impossible. I saw that God is in my brothers, and my brothers are in me, and separation and division are impossible. All that I had seen before, which caused me pain and suffering and loneliness, were wiped out forever. Before me, I saw only the expression of perfect freedom, and I knew that what I saw was love. This is written down as a promise to all of mankind. Each one shall come to know this vision, and no one shall be left out. For this vision is the reflection of your truth, and your truth is still in you. So you can see how when these false ideas die the second death, which means there can be no more resurrection of them. They never come back again. Now, this is when everything as God is actually being seen. I mean, this is just the way one sees. And you can't see another way because you don't have those false ideas prejudicing you about what you see, coloring your vision. Verses 6 to 8. He who is thirsty, let him drink of the wisdom of the Holy Spirit. Let him teach you. Follow his guidance in trust and expectation that you shall be healed. You are the free Son of God. Nothing can stand between you and your one true desire except your own desire to not know yourself. You are free. Once again, this is reminding me of Michael Langford, because he says the most important first step is increasing our desire for liberation or awakening. And this is saying the only thing that can get in your way is you not wanting it enough. You know, still wanting other things. So it's saying the exact same thing that Michael Langford teaches, right? Nothing can stand between you and your own desire to not know yourself. Your own desire to believe that you're a person who needs a mate, or that you're a person who needs to make lots of money, or that you're a person that needs to get rid of this guy that's in your life because you've been with him for 35 years and you can't stand to listen to him another day, or whatever. You know, if you think you want something other than know thyself, that's what's keeping you from knowing yourself. And so you want to see every desire. In fact, what I came to do was I came to look at desires as one of two things. Either it was the desire to know thyself, or it was the desire not to know thyself. Right? And if you can look at it that way, you can drop those other desires pretty quickly. Right? That's the desire not to know thyself, and just bring yourself back. Verses 9 to 14. Symbolism is gone forever when you can look beyond the symbols to the truth that merely is. In this truth do all symbols disappear, for in this truth is all interpretation rendered meaningless. So what happens is we seem to go through a process of, you know, thinking that, you know, people are people and they're separate from me. And besides that, they're jerks or whatever, right? And then we come to a point where we've done enough letting go where we kind of, I mean, I think at least the way I experience, you kind of see everyone as the same as me. You know, like even the ego is the same as my ego, right? And the differences begin to disappear and sameness starts to appear. That's still at the level of interpretation. It's a helpful perception. It's moving toward truth. But then what happens is sameness disappears and all there is God, or all there is self, or all there is truth, right? That arises. And in that, there's no more interpretation. That's just when you know truth and you're seeing truth, right? That which cannot be described is indescribable. But it shall be known because it is known. It is your truth and it is within your knowing now. You need only to let go of everything that is not this knowing without clinging to anything that feels safe within the familiar. And the familiar will fade away that the known may shine within your mind. And there will be no words unless they are given to you or given you. So this is, of course, describing the state, if you want to call it a state, of pure knowledge. Right? This is the state of pure knowledge that this paragraph is pointing to. It calls it indescribable. And it says that you'll have no words at all unless they're given to you. The idea that you are a person has completely died, and in that way you cease to be a person. So you aren't thinking for yourself anymore. You aren't thinking, you know, what am I going to say to this guy? That stuff isn't even happening. You're just being. The guy's talking. And if you're to say something back, you open your mouth and the words come out. You know, there's just the present moment is the way many people describe that. But you as a person literally no longer exist. There's no you thinking and planning and figuring out. It may still appear that way to others. They see you having a conversation and they don't know what it's like for you. So they assume that you're thinking while he's talking and you're deciding what you're going to say back. But that's not happening. You're just izzing.
I like that.
Right? That's what you're doing. You're izzing. And everything is just happening. In fact, we're reading Nisargadatta now, and this is exactly how he describes his experience, right?
Yeah.
He says, in fact, in the message I read today, he says, just like you don't have to think about your digestion or your hair growing, I don't have to think about what I'm going to say. It just happens. And that's what this is saying. Verses 22 to 27. All that is, all that ever was, and all that is to come is you. You are the light and the vessel through which the light shines. You are the reflection which is made of your light. You are all that is and separate from none of it. For there is only one, and since you are, you are the one. So again, this is telling us everything is God, everything is you. You know, you could say that you're not the person and you are the person in that way, right? Because you're everything. So next week we'll do our final chapter, which is very short, but we'll do it. Maybe we'll have a short week next week because I don't want to start Inner Ramana the same night. So we will finish NTI Revelation 22 next week. And then the week after that, we'll begin the teachings of Inner Ramana. What I'll do is I'll bring books next week so you can purchase them if you want to. They'll be $12. So you could bring $12 for that. How's that sound? So our assignment, well, it depends on what you want, but I'm turned back to Revelation 20, and it says, this is something you must be willing to do. You must be willing to rest the thinking mind at every opportunity given. It's funny because Danielle is, it looks like she's going to be building a house. But a few weeks ago, we were having this conversation about should she move out or should she not move out? Should she build a house or should she buy this other house available on Glen Rose that's already built? And what I said to her was, Danielle, let's just not think. I said, why don't you just start taking these steps and let's see what happens. You know, like if it unfolds in a certain way, then that's what's to happen. If it just doesn't work out, then it means you're not supposed to move out. But we don't have to think about it, right? We don't have to think about it. So that's really the assignment. You know, what are you thinking about that you don't have to think about? You can just watch and see what happens, you know? One way that helped me to shift into this watching mode was I started pretending. I used my imagination in the beginning. I started pretending my life was a movie. And I would watch the movie. Oh, I wonder what's going to happen next. Oh, I wonder how this is going to work out. So maybe that will be helpful to you. But try to get into the state of not thinking as much as possible and just kind of letting things unfold, watching, right? Where are you thinking now that you don't have to think, that you can just say, okay, this will happen or it won't happen, and I'll find out. So rest the thinking mind at every opportunity given you. That will be our assignment for the week.
Sounds good.
Okay? All right, I'll stop the recording, and we will have our traditional silence.